The following message is from Pastor Steve Lee of Emmanuel Community Church. More information about the ministry of Emmanuel Community Church can be found at emmanuelcommunity.org.
So we are several weeks into this Ten Commandments series that we've been calling the Ten Words. And that's because that's actually how the Bible refers to it, as Ten Words, not commandments. And they are in command form. We have to acknowledge that they are in command form. But we call them words because they also are inviting us to receive them, almost like we would receive wedding vows. Not only, in other words, as obligations that need to be fulfilled, but also promises that define a relationship with God, offering also a vision for the kind of life that God invites us to in this relationship with Him. And so we've arrived at our fourth command or fourth word, and it's about the Sabbath. And it's found in Exodus 20, verse 8 through 11. And it says, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." Now, I don't think any of us would dispute that we need to honor a lot of these commands in these Ten Commandments or these Ten Words, like don't kill or don't commit adultery, don't steal, right? But I think this idea of a weekly day of rest seems not so obvious as something that we ought to really consider in our day. Does it really still apply to us? And what would it look like for us to, quote, keep the Sabbath in this modern day? There are many aspects of this fourth word that are very unique. And let me just outline some of them to you. One of the most obvious is that it's the longest of all 10 words. In other words, more words are used to describe this one than all the others. It is also the most mentioned of the 10 in the Bible. It occurs over 100 times. It's referenced over 100 times in the Old Testament alone. And a lot of scholars believe that that may indicate that it is among the most important commands, although it doesn't seem very obvious that it would be so. I also want to say that most of the 10 words are stated in the negative. Do not this, do not that. But remember the Sabbath and honor your father and mother are the only two of the 10 that are stated in the positive. In other words, rather than telling us a sin that needs to be avoided or removed from our life, they are pointing to something good that needs to be added to our life that is very likely missing. Lastly, it's a command that is really, in a lot of ways, one of a kind in the ancient world. No other major religion has ever instituted anything like this, of a regular rhythm of mandated rest where all work is supposed to stop. It's unprecedented. The idea of a God requiring a daily day of rest for the entire nation, whether you were a master or a slave, a foreigner, an animal, a woman or a male, it was just never seen anywhere else before. And so as we've done with the other words, the way I'm going to approach unpacking this idea of the Sabbath is that I want to first connect it with God's original design in creation, going all the way back to Genesis 1. And then we're going to trace that storyline into the story of Israel, and then fast forward into Jesus. And then lastly, we'll take a look at what it means for us today. So we're, first of all, in this fourth word, told that we need to rest because God rested after he created the universe. But I want to say that at first glance, that connection isn't really obvious, is it? You know, we rest because God rested. What does God resting after creation have to do with our weekly rhythm of not working, but resting. And I want to ask even a more foundational question is, what does it even mean to say that God rested? I mean, to make sense of that phrase, God rested, we have to go back to the creation account. In Genesis 2, verse 2 through 3, it says this, "By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." Now, in the creation story, the seventh day actually seems really anticlimactic, doesn't it? The previous 6 days are filled with all kinds of exciting activity as God creates light and the sea and the sky and plants and every living creature and finally human beings who are made in his image. But on the seventh day, apparently nothing happens. God takes the day off. He's on vacation. And so it almost feels like the truth is we ought to talk about the 6 days of creation, right? Since the seventh day felt like a throwaway day. But that perspective misses the entire point of the story. Because the seventh day is the climax. The first 6 days, God is bringing order out of chaos. And he takes a world that is formless and empty and begins separating light from darkness so that each has its purpose. And then he separates water from dry land so that each with its unique function can serve God's purpose as well. And then God fills the sky with birds and the sea with fish and the land with all kinds of creatures. And then he places human beings who are his image bearers to rule alongside him. And in essence, what this story of creation is telling us is that by bringing his creation out of chaos and into a state of peace and order under his authority, God is establishing the conditions under which we can finally rest and rule over all that he has made. That is what God is doing. His rest represents order out of that chaos. And that is key to understanding what it means when it says God rested. It doesn't mean that God was tired and he needed a recovery day. He is all-powerful and has infinite resources, but in ancient times, if you look at the ancient literature, to speak of a king resting didn't refer to him lounging around his palace or going to sleep. It pointed to the fact that the king had overcome his enemies and brought peace to his land, and now he can sit securely on his throne and rule in peace. So when Genesis says God rested on the seventh day, it doesn't mean he took a day off from ruling his universe. I mean, that would be chaos, right? It would mean planets would spin out of their orbits. It would be like chickens mating with cows. I don't know. I mean, whatever you think. It's like if God took a day off, it would be crazy, right? But what it's saying when it says that God rested is that it means that he set the stage in the first 6 days of bringing order and peace to his creation so that now he can take his throne as king and rule over his creation. And that is beautifully captured in this Psalm 132, verse 13 to 16. "For the Lord has chosen Zion. He has desired it for his dwelling, saying, 'This is my resting place forever and ever. Here I will sit enthroned, for I have desired it. I will bless her with abundant provisions. Her poor I will satisfy with food. I will clothe her priests with salvation, and her faithful people will ever sing for joy.'" Notice, God's resting place is his throne. They're equated with each other. And so to say that God rests is to say that he has created the conditions where he can now peacefully reign his kingdom. Also notice that his rest, out of his rest flows care for the poor and food for the hungry, which results in the subjects of his kingdom singing and rejoicing. This is why we're told that to rest is because God rests. His rest means that he has created the conditions through which we can find our own rest in this life. There's one more observation that I want to point out here about this creation story that is critical to understanding the teaching on the Sabbath. Each of the first 6 days ends with this exact same statement. And there was evening, and there was morning the first day. There was evening, there was morning the second day. There was evening, and there was morning the third day, and the fourth day, and the fifth day, and the sixth day. Each day has a clear beginning and a clear ending. But then you get to the seventh day. And it says in chapter 2, verse 3, then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. And you are expecting the same pattern. It's just, you're just anxious for it. You're waiting for the Bible to say, and there was evening and there was morning the seventh day. But it never happens. It's missing. And Bible scholars tell us that this glaring absence of this repeated phrase carries a profound message about the seventh day. And what it is this: unlike the other 6 days, which have a clear ending to them, God's intention was that we would live in a perpetual seventh day rest, dwelling forever in his presence under his loving reign. In other words, the seventh day was never meant to come to an end. It was to be the continual experience of his creation, rest, resting in God. Giving rest to his creation was, in other words, the ultimate goal of everything of this whole creation story. But let's be honest, that's not how we experience creation, is it? I don't think the first word that comes to mind living this life is rest. Because of sin, creation now exists under a curse. And the earth is filled with thorns and thistles. And the work that was once supposed to be life-giving partnership with God has now become frustrating and filled with struggles and setbacks and failures. And the question that is looming large over all of this is, how do we find rest in a world like this? Because we're not in the garden anymore. Well, to answer that question, let's look at what Sabbath meant to the Israelites. When the 10 words are repeated in Deuteronomy, the command is almost identical to what we find in Exodus, the one we just read. But the reason that God gives for the Sabbath is completely different. Exodus pointed to creation, didn't it? But Deuteronomy is going to point to the fact that they were slaves in Egypt and are now set free. Deuteronomy 5, 13 to 15 says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Sounds almost identical to Exodus, right? But then you get to verse 15, and it says, remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Israel had just experienced 400 years of slavery in Egypt, where their entire existence revolved around relentless, dehumanizing productivity. They were treated like machinery, and their worth was measured completely by how many bricks they made for Pharaoh at the end of each day. That was the closing of every day for 400 years. How many bricks did you make today? But God set them free from that slavery and that entire system. And celebrating the Sabbath becomes a weekly reminder of that liberation that they experienced. Notice that everyone is included in the Sabbath rest. You, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your animals even, the foreigners who are in your midst, everyone stops their work on the Sabbath. Masters and servants resting side by side. This is unprecedented in the ancient world. For one day a week, in other words, the entire social hierarchy collapses and everyone stands on equal ground before God as a recipient of his common gift of rest to all of them. And the Sabbath declares week after week that a human being is more than what they can produce. We are image bearers, and our worth is not measured, in other words, by our productivity. The Sabbath given to Israel suggests that even in a broken world, groaning under the curse, God has not abandoned the project of the seventh day. His intended rest at the very beginning of creation can still be experienced, even in the midst of a broken and fallen world. He is still seeking to restore this rest that people can experience. And the Sabbath was Israel's weekly reminder that one day God would bring them rest and restore what was lost in the garden. Well, that brings us to Jesus. When we turn to the Gospels, we discover that Jesus also connects the Sabbath with the theme of liberation from the brokenness of creation. So much, interestingly, of Jesus' conflict with the religious leaders, therefore, then, centered around the singular issue of the Sabbath. That's because the leaders took what God gave to his people as a gift and turned it into a crushing burden. What was supposed to be a day of rest and rejuvenation had become the most dreaded day of the week, in all honesty. It's like, oh no, Sabbath is coming. Get ready for it. It's another week. The Talmud eventually devoted 24 chapters to Sabbath regulations. You couldn't travel more than a half mile from your house on the Sabbath. You couldn't carry anything heavier than a dry fig on the Sabbath. Do you know how light a dry fig is? You couldn't tie certain knots on the Sabbath. And so when you needed to draw water from the well on the Sabbath, what they had this little loophole is that you could tie something to a woman's garment, and then you could get water out of a well that way. If your house caught on fire on the Sabbath, you could not carry your burning clothes out of there. You had to put them all on your body, because wearing is not the same as carrying, and carrying is doing work. Can you imagine how insane this is? I mean, we're all tempted to laugh if it wasn't so tragic. Jesus walks into this tragedy with a message. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And then to drive this point home, he repeatedly, intentionally heals on the Sabbath, picking a fight with these religious leaders. A man with a shriveled hand, a paralytic by a pool, a blind man, a woman bent over and her spine crippled for over 18 years. And that's just to name a few of the many examples of this. But it is as if every time the Sabbath was coming, Jesus decided he's going to heal someone. And oh, how it enraged the Pharisees. But if the Sabbath points to the day when God will restore all things, then healing someone on the Sabbath isn't a violation of that day. It is the very fulfillment of it. And through these healings, Jesus is declaring that the Sabbath is a day for doing good, for experiencing freedom and mercy and restoration from God. But even more than that, through these miracles, Jesus was declaring that the Sabbath finds its ultimate meaning in him. He, in other words, is the one that the seventh day was pointing to all along. In Hebrews chapter 4, verse 9 through 11, we find these words: "There remains then a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For anyone who enters God's rest also rests from their works, just as God did from his. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest, so that no one will perish by following their example of disobedience." The Sabbath was always pointing beyond a weekly day of physical rest. That's what the writer of Hebrews is making clear. It was pointing to a deeper, greater rest that God desires to give his people through a restored relationship with him. And reflecting on how the Israelites failed to enter God's promised land because of their unbelief, the writer of Hebrews tells us, don't follow their example, but make every effort to enter that rest. Now, that sounds like a contradiction, doesn't it? Entering rest shouldn't involve effort, should it? Seems paradoxical. In fact, entering rest just logically ought to be the easiest thing in the world to do. But he's saying, listen, to really experience this rest that God is promising us, there is a fight involved here. It is going to require intense effort to enter this rest promised to us. Because the effort, I think, that the writer of Hebrews is describing is the effort of surrender. It is the daily struggle to stop trusting in our own performance and achievements. To enter God's rest means that by faith, we trust in the finished work of Christ rather than what we can do for ourselves. In other words, we don't work to gain this rest. Instead, we cease from working because Jesus has already accomplished the work for us. Just as God rested because of his work of creation was finished, we can rest because on the cross, Jesus also declared, "It is finished." And I think this is precisely why God invites us into rhythms of Sabbath rest that must be intentional and regular in our life. We need to practice this trust in the gospel message of what Jesus has done for us. In other words, every time we deliberately stop striving and accomplishing, we are reminding our hearts that our deepest needs have already been met through Jesus. Every Sabbath, in other words, is reenacting a small act of that surrender and that trust. We lay down our need to achieve, to earn, to prove ourselves. And the rhythm of Sabbath trains our souls to believe these words just a little bit more deeply each week, until resting in Christ becomes not just something we do one day a week, but becomes something that we carry our entire lives. Because we live in a culture that just never stops, don't we? There is always one more email that you need to get out. There's almost always one more project you need to get done and finish. One more way to be productive and to prove yourselves. But the discipline of the Sabbath pushes back against that constant pressure to perform, and it teaches us that we can rest in God because he is the one that is sustaining our world, not us. It doesn't rest on our shoulders. God will carry that burden for us. Well, this is all theoretical, but I think the question that is really pressing on us is, yeah, but what are you really saying? Are you saying that, like the Jews, we ought to take one day a week and actually really literally do no work? Paul addresses that question to the early church in Colossians chapter 2, verse 16 to 17. It says, "Therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ." In other words, under this new covenant, Christians are not bound to observe a literal Sabbath day as a legal requirement. The Sabbath was always pointing beyond the day itself to Christ. And now that we are experiencing that reality, our standing before God is not determined by whether we keep a particular day, but it's by our faith in Jesus alone. But I also want to say this. I don't think that means we ought to discard the entire wisdom of a weekly rhythm of keeping a day of rest. We aren't doing it in order to be obedient to the law, but I think we're doing it as a way of training our hearts into this truth. The truth is, we all feel guilty, don't we, when we're not accomplishing something in our lives. And the truth is, in our culture, it is a badge of honor to be known as a super busy guy, right? If you're not busy, it's like, what's wrong with your life, you know? Like, what kind of loser are you? You ought to be so busy. I think there is a worry also for many of us that if we're not working 7 days a week, the truth is our world around us is going to fall apart. Our career is not going to go forward. Our family is not going to be able to make it. And so I want to actually invite you to genuinely consider setting aside a day like that. The Jewish understanding of the day is really interesting to me. Practically speaking, in most of the world, we think of the day beginning in the morning when you wake up, right? That's the beginning of a new day. But in Israel, that's not how it works. Do you know when a Jewish day begins? Sunset. It's really interesting, isn't it? The Jewish day begins at sunset. And that was the pattern we actually saw in Genesis 1, right? It says, and there was evening and there was morning the first day. It starts with the evening and it ends with the morning, even in the creation account. What that means is that the very first thing that an Israelite did at the beginning of each new day is what? They went to bed. You go to sleep. You start the day by going to bed. And while they went to sleep, God continued to govern the universe. And it was the sense in which my day begins with me going to sleep and surrendering control of my life to God. And while I'm asleep, God is at wake, caring for this world. That is such a powerful way to think of our lives, right? I begin the day asleep, and I wake into a new day in which God has already been at work for hours without me. And I think that is the point of the Sabbath. It teaches us that my identity is not found in what I can accomplish, but that God is caring for me and He loves me. It reminds us that we can stop working because God never does. Whether or not we choose to practice a weekly Sabbath, there is a profound wisdom, and I think, in cultivating that type of a rhythm in our life. Romans 14, verse 5 says, one person considers one day more sacred than another. Another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. So again, very clearly, this is not a command we have to follow. Okay? And even in the church, there's this huge debate going on about whether the Sabbath is Saturday or the Sabbath is Sunday. And it, to me, where I land on that is, I think it's very clear that the Sabbath is Saturday. It's the end of the week. And that Sunday, we don't call it the Sabbath, but it is the Lord's Day. It's the Resurrection Sunday, right? But having said that, what I want to say also is this. If we are going to designate a day of the week where we put away work and just have an entirely different sacred rhythm, I actually feel like it makes most sense to do it on a Sunday. Why I say that is because it's already the day that we're gathering together like this. We at least dedicate part of the day like this already in a Sunday worship. And so what I want to invite you to consider is, what would it look like to commit the entire day like that? And I really would hope that some of you guys wrestle with this, but I'm being pretty direct here in saying, like, I am saying, like, being as intentional as saying, I am literally not going to do anything productive on this day. Meaning, I'm not going to have a whole list of errands that I didn't get to because Monday through Friday was too busy, and Saturday is my catch-up day, okay? I think that violates the spirit of the Sabbath. I'm not going to do any yard work. I'm not going to wash my car. I'm not going to do grocery shopping. I'm literally going to do no work and be reminded that it's okay, that my worth, my existence is not defined by how many bricks I made today. And I want you to think about what that would look like to just enter into the joy of the Lord and the rest that He wants to give us by enjoying some hobbies, by getting together with friends and enjoying a good meal together. Steer away from activities that you've used in the past to validate yourself. Instead, do things that simply remind you that God is big and that you are small and that He loves you. Also, keep in mind that the Sabbath was a communal thing. It was a day in which everyone rested, and that the master would give his slave rest on that day. And I wonder if that's another shift we need in our thinking is, how can the intentional rest that I'm committing to be a rest for somebody else? And maybe that involves hosting a dinner And, you know, I'm saying, like, don't work on the Sabbath, so just cater food, okay? You don't have to cook that day. Just order out and then spread a table at your home. And let the rest that you have intentionally decided to offer to God also pull others in to your rest. And let them experience what Sabbath means to you by the hospitality you offer to others. I'll just close with this. In the prophet Amos's day, people grumbled about the Sabbath. Amos 8, verse 5, "When will the new moon be over that we may sell grain, and the Sabbath be ended that we may market wheat?" That was their attitude. It's like, shoot, you know, like they were just waiting for Sabbath to be over. That was the mindset. It's like, this is so burdensome. Like, we want to get back to our normal life. The Sabbath stinks. They saw Sabbath as a frustrating interruption of business as usual. It was like a child moaning because they're forced to take a nap, right? I'm not sleepy. Then just lay there. Oh, I want to get up, right? That's what this whole message probably sounds like to some of you, right? I don't want to take a nap. Listen, I don't want it to feel like I'm just adding one more burden to an already overloaded life. But what I want to say is this. At the same time, to experience the rest that God desires for us, it will require us to be intentional about practicing it as a discipline, because there's something inside every one of us that is so deeply resistant to this idea. It exposes how much we need it by how much we hate the thought of it, right? I hope that by committing yourselves to this kind of a rhythm, you will eventually settle into a deep sense of enjoyment of it to the point where you actually begin craving it. You're thinking Sabbath cannot come quickly enough because I am so exhausted. And the thought of literally sleeping until 11 and just doing nothing that day, everything in your instinct is to say, that's what lazy bums do, you know? But God is saying, rest. Because every time you do that, it is an act of faith and trust that I am the one caring for your life, not your high-capacity productivity of what you're doing for you and your family and everyone else. Jesus' invitation to us is simply this in Matthew 11, 28 to 30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Let's pray.